to turn to the book of James, chapter 4. Book of James, chapter 4, and we want to read the entire chapter, verses 1 through 17. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts, and war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight in war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lust. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Do you think that the Scripture saith in vain, the Spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? But he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil, he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law, and judgeth the law. But if thou judgest the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver, who is able to save and destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be in the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. I want to take the thought of the message tonight from verse 8. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. I want to speak on the subject of drawing near to God. The words draw nigh to God present a possibility. That is, we can draw near to God. Those words present an opportunity, and they present a responsibility as well. At salvation, according to Ephesians chapter 2, we were far off, and when the Lord saved us, we were made nigh by the blood of Christ. And every day since that day, it has been possible for you and I to draw near to God. You think of how many days you have been saved. You think of how many hours you have been saved. And however many days, however many hours that is, you have had the opportunity all that time to draw nigh to God. So we need to stop and we need to examine, how close am I to God? Now we realize that God is omnipresent. That is, he's everywhere. So when we read the term, the phrase, draw nigh to God, in light of God's omnipresence, draw nigh to God, obviously, is speaking of a relationship to the Lord. When the Lord saved our soul, he initiated a relationship. We can progress in that relationship by drawing near to God. To draw near to God is to know God more. The closer we get to God, the more we know Him. That is, it's to be more familiar with the Lord. It's sad today, but there are many who profess to be saved who are not all that familiar with the Lord. They're not very near to the Lord. To draw nigh to God means to have a closer friendship with the Lord. It means to have a warmer friendship with the Lord. It's to have a greater esteem for God. The closer you and I get to God, the more we esteem God, the more we reverence God. It's also to have a deeper sense of His presence. It's to have our heart more occupied with Him. It's to have a more personal experience of the Lord. It's to abide in Him. It's to dine with Him. It's to feel His embrace. This is what it means to draw nigh to God. The psalmist Asaph in Psalm 73 and 28 says, "It is good for me to draw near to God." That is true of each one of us. It is good for me to draw near to God. It is good for you to draw near to God. That means it is to my advantage. It will be an advantage to me personally. It will be an advantage to my life to draw near to God. If it's good for me to draw near to God, that means that it is worthwhile. Whatever it takes to draw near to God, it's worthwhile. It's good for me. It means it's profitable. It's to my benefit. And that's true of all of us. But if it's good for me to draw near to God, that also means it's right for me. It's the right thing to do. And it's always the right thing to do. It's always right for me to draw near to God. And it's always wrong for me to draw further from God. It's reasonable. That is, it's rational. It's good for me to draw near to God. That is, it's just good common sense to draw for a sinner to draw near to God. It's advisable. If something is good for us, then it's advisable. And it's advisable no matter what my situation, it's advisable for me to draw near to God. No matter what my circumstances are, no matter what I feel like, no matter what's going on, it's advisable for me and it's advisable for you to draw near to God. Considering who God is, it's good for us to draw near to God. He's the Creator. He's the sovereign ruler of all. He's holy God. He's omnipotent God. And on and on and on we could go. But it, because of who He is, it's good for me, it's good for you to draw near to God. Now James, here in James chapter 4, gives us the exhortation, draw nigh to God. And you'll notice there are no restrictions. It's just draw nigh to God. There are no limitations. It's just draw nigh to God. There is never a time. There is never a condition. There is never a place. There is never a position that I might find myself in. There is never a situation. There is never a circumstance when those words, when that exhortation is not in force. Draw nigh to God. We need to always hear those words. When you don't know what to do about any given situation, you know this. Draw nigh to God. Draw close to God. Well, I just don't know what to do. Draw close to God. It's always good advice. It's always the best thing for you to do. It's never the best thing. It's never a good thing not to draw nigh to God. So draw near to God. There are no limitations. There are no what ifs. In other words, it's never wrong. It's never bad. It's never misappropriate. It's never unwise. It's never unadvisable. Draw nigh to God. Now, following the exhortation there in James 4 and verse 8, there's a promise. And he will draw nigh to you. Now, there is a sense. If you just look at it from God's omnipresence, can you and I really get closer to God? I mean, he's everywhere. How can you get closer? How can he get closer to us? So again, this is obviously speaking about a relationship with the Lord. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. What I believe that means is you draw close to God, and you will feel God's closeness to you, and he will draw nigh to you. So we want to speak upon these words this evening. Draw nigh to God. You know, if you think about it, many times it is preached, we've got to be doing more. And there is some truth to that. But really, that's not the central message. It's not really about doing more for God. It's about being with God more. It's about being closer to God. And if you're with God more and you're closer to God, you will do more. And you will want to do more. But many times we get our focus on just doing more, and you can do a lot of doing and never get real close to God. But it's better if you get close to God first and then do. And that's the end that we need to work. We need to draw near to God. It's not do more for God. It's draw near to God. And we want to notice 10 things tonight. We want to center around these words. Draw nigh to God. And I believe as we look through these verses, there are 10 things that we want to notice that are necessary to draw nigh to God. First of all, there has to be the right kind of praying. We see that in verses 1 through 3. The chapter opens with a rebuke concerning prayer. It is a twofold rebuke. There is a rebuke for those in verse 2. Notice the last three words of verse 2. Ye ask not. That is a rebuke concerning prayerlessness. There were people who were not praying. Then we read in verse 3. Ye ask amiss. That's the second part of the rebuke. There were those who were not praying. And then there were those who were praying, but they weren't praying right. They weren't asking for the right things. They were asking for the wrong thing in the wrong way. But my point is, we cannot have a right relationship with God, and we cannot draw near to God if our prayer life is not right. You cannot ignore prayer, and you cannot just pray any way you please and draw near to God. So if we're going to draw near to God, we need to pray. We need to pray for the right things. Song of Solomon 1 and verse 4 we read the words, "Draw me." That's a prayer. That is a prayer of the Shulamite woman. These two words simply mean, "Bring me. Cause me to move continuously toward thee." That's a good prayer. That's a prayer that we ought to always find ourselves praying. "Lord, bring me closer to thee." It says, "Draw me and we will run after thee." So, "Lord, bring me closer to thee. Cause me to move in your direction. Cause me to move toward you." In light of the fact that it is good for me to draw near to God, it seems to me that it would then be good for me to pray, "Draw me. Draw me." Now, most of us know by now that we're not going to draw near to God on our own. He has to draw us. So therefore, we need to always be praying, "Draw me." Again, whatever our situation, the first thing we pray should not be, "Lord, get me out of this mess, deliver me from this." It ought to be, "Draw me. Draw me closer to thee." Because if we're drawn closer to God, then we can handle whatever situation that God has called us to be in. But we have to be near to God. So this is a prayer of personal desire. We're not going to pray for God to draw us until we desire to be closer to God. It is a prayer, it shows a longing, a thirsting, a hungering to be closer to God, to have a more personal relationship with God. Again, we're just newly into a new year, and people think all the time, "Well, I'm going to do this year, I'm going to do that and that and that, I'm going to do more for the Lord this year." Forget all of that. And just draw near to God. Just draw near to God. Make that your goal. Make that your goal every single day. "I'm going to draw near to God." And all the doing more, all of that will take care of itself if we just draw near to God. But if all we do is do, and not draw near to God, what do we have? We have Pharisees. That's what the Pharisees did. They were all about doing, but there was no personal relationship with God. So we want to stress this evening the importance of a personal relationship with God. Again, you think of all the days you've been saved and you've had the opportunity to draw near to God. Do you realize how close you and I would be to God if we drew near to God every single day since we were saved? How close we would be right now. Much closer than we are. But let's be honest, there have been many days when we went back from God. There have been many days when we didn't draw near and we went backward. And then you got to start all over again. So draw near to God. This is a prayer that is the result of a sense of need. I need to draw near to God. I need to be near God. You need to be near God. You need to be close to God. None of us are as close as we ought to be. None of us are as close as we could be. We need to be near to God. I don't know what's going to happen this evening, but I do know this, that I need to be close to God. Whatever it is that's going to happen, I'm going to need to be close to the Lord. So always be drawing near with God. But this is also a prayer of one who is not content with their present spiritual condition. Draw near to God. That is, it's the realization of an individual that I can always be closer. So we ought to always be praying, "Draw me." It's never wrong. Now, there are a lot of things that you and I can ask God for that would be debatable whether or not it's the right thing to ask for. But this is one thing, there's no debate. It cannot possibly be wrong, ever, for you and I to pray, draw me. That is never asking amiss. Draw me. It may be asking amiss for me to say, Lord, deliver me from such and such a sickness. That might be praying amiss. That might not be according to God's will at all. But I know this, it's always God's will for me to be closer to God. So anytime I pray, draw me closer to thee, that's a prayer in God's will. And those are the prayers that are answered. But it's also a prayer that proceeds from a sense of danger. The more you and I feel the pullings of the flesh, the pullings of the world, the pullings of the devil, and the more we feel ourselves being pulled by these things, the more we realize that there's danger. And the more we realize the danger, we need to pray, Lord, draw me. Draw me from the lusts of the flesh to thee. That can never be wrong to pray. Draw me from the snares of the devil to thee. Draw me from the allurements and the entanglements of the world to thee. Draw me from all the temptations that I feel and draw me to thee. Draw me from myself and draw me to thee. Draw me from my own reasonings to thee. Draw me from anything that would cause me spiritual harm. Take me from those things and draw me closer to thee. This is a prayer that we ought to pray fervently. So if we're ever going to be close to God, if we're ever going to draw near to God, we have to pray right. And I believe part of praying right is always to pray, Lord, draw me closer. The very moment you feel tempted to do whatever it is, pray, Lord, draw me. I need you to draw me right now. I need you to draw me closer to thee right now. Every time you feel like, When human reasoning is getting in the way, you need to pray, Lord, draw me. Draw me from myself. Draw me from my own reasoning. Draw me to yourself. When you don't know what to do, you need to pray, Lord, draw me. Draw me closer to thee. When you don't know what to pray for, pray, draw me closer to thee. So we see if we're ever going to be close to God, we've got to pray. Secondly, there has to be a forsaking of the world's ways. We see that in verse 4. He says, ye adulterers and adulteresses. He's talking spiritually. Know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Two phrases, friendship of the world and enmity with God. Think of those two phrases. Friendship is to be in harmony. To be in harmony with the world is enmity against God. That's what it says. To be in unity with the world, that's what friendship is, it's unity. To be in unity with the world is enmity with God. To have an affection, to have a rapport with the world is to be at enmity with God. Now what is enmity? Enmity is hostility. The friendship of the world is hostility against God. It is animosity against God. It is friction To be a friend of the world is to be at friction with God. Now, if you are in hostility with God, if there is an animosity between you and God, if there is friction between you and God, you're not drawing close to God. So in order to draw near to God, there has to be a forsaking of the world's ways. Now notice that it does not say the friendship of the world will lead to or will result in enmity with God. That's not what it says. It says that the friendship of the world is, not that it will end up being, but it is. Friendship of the world is enmity with God. James reemphasizes this by saying, whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world, and notice it's whosoever will be. That is, if you even have the desire to be the friend of the world, you're the enemy of God. It's not just that we're not to be friends with the world. We're not even to desire friendship with the world. Because to even desire that friendship puts us in hostility with God and creates a friction between us and the Lord. Friendship with the world will not cause you to draw near to God. Friendship with the world will always lead you further and further and further away from God. So if we're going to draw near to God, we have to forsake the world and its ways. Now again, this verse is very plain. The friendship of the world is enmity with God. And he asks that as a question. Know ye not? As if everyone ought to know that. Friendship of the world is enmity with God. Don't tell somebody that their friendship of the world is going to cause them to be the enemy of God. Their friendship of the world makes them the enemy of God. There's a big difference. So if we're going to draw nigh to God, we have to forsake the world. Then notice the third thing. Verse 7. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. You and I will never draw nigh to God if we do not submit ourselves to God. Every time we submit to God, that is a drawing near to God. I mean truly submit. Not just submitting outwardly and yet murmuring and complaining inwardly. That's not true submission. We're talking about submitting inwardly and we're talking about submitting outwardly. But the command is submit to God. And what that means is give in to God. There are far too many who profess to be saved who are constantly at battle with God. There is a battle between what they want to do and what God is telling them to do. If you want to draw near to God, if you want peace in your life, if you want to be what God would have you to be, you had better give in to God. Give in to God. Why wouldn't we give in to God? It must be that we think we know better than God. What else could it be? It must be that we think we know what's best for us. Just give in to God. When God says, do this, do it. No questions asked. No hesitancy. Just do it. And isn't it easier to just submit right away than for God to bring us to submission, and God can bring you to submission. God can bring anybody to submission. But I'm telling you, it's just a lot easier to just do what he says. It's good advice for children. Just do what mom and dad says. It's easier. They can make you submit. They ought to make you submit. So just submit. It's much easier. It means to yield to God, to surrender to God, to present ourselves to God. Not to do that is to rebel against God. It is to revolt against God. So if we're going to draw near to God, we must submit to God. And all these things work together. Fourthly, verse 7 says, resist the devil. And then there is a promise. And he will flee from you. Submit to God. Resist the devil. Now many who profess to be saved have turned that around. They resist God and they submit to the devil. And then they wonder, why is my life always a mess? Because you've got everything backwards. Submit to God. Resist the devil. To resist means to withstand. Which implies, of course, that the devil is going to attack. To resist means to combat against. It means to struggle with. Make sure that you're against the devil. Make sure that you're not on his side. Always make sure of that. Always make sure you're on the right side. And the right side, of course, is God's side. And we can only submit to God in our day-to-day lives if we actively resist the devil. Those two things go hand in hand. Submit to God, resist the devil, and the promise is he will flee from you. Now I'll give you another promise. It's not here, but it's true. He'll be back. He'll flee from you. But he's going to come back. And you resist and he'll flee again. But he's going to come back. The answer is you just keep on resisting. And he keeps on leaving. And he'll keep coming back. But you just, what do? When he comes back? You resist. I'm telling you, resisting the devil works. He will flee. He will flee from you. But when you toy with the devil's suggestions, he's going to hang around. He's going to spend some time with you. You've invited him into your life, and now you're going to have problems. So just resist, and he will flee. We see also, fifthly, there is to be an outer and inward cleansing. Verse 8 says, cleanse your hands, that's outwardly, ye sinners. Purify your hearts, that's inwardly, ye double-minded. And what we have to purify our hearts from is worldly-mindedness. We have to cleanse ourselves or purify ourselves from being double-minded. It's like we said in Sunday school this morning, sin cannot be allowed to reign in our lives. If we're going to draw near to God, you cannot allow sin to reign in your life. We all sin. We all have sin in our lives. And the truth is, our spiritual well-being depends upon what we do with that sin. You can cover it up. You can ignore it. You can excuse it. You can justify it. You can deal with it. The only way that you'll draw near to God is to deal with the sin in your life. Deal with the sin that's in our lives. We have to do that every single day. Every day we need to confess to God the ways that we know that we have sinned. And there are many ways in which you and I know that we have sinned. But not only that, we need to confess, Lord, forgive me even the areas that I don't even know that I've sinned. We need to take care of that as well. Because those things, even if you don't know about it, will hinder, will keep you back from God. If we're going to draw near to God, there has to be a dealing. There has to be a cleansing of sin. Notice, sixthly, in verse 9, this goes along with what we just said about cleansing. Be afflicted, mourn, and weep. That shows that there is to be a godly sorrow over sin. These things are necessary if we're going to draw nigh to God. It says, be afflicted. The word afflicted speaks of pain, something you feel. It speaks of suffering and trouble. Sin ought to pain us. It ought to cause us some degree of suffering. It ought to trouble us. And the nearer we get to God, the more sin will pain us. We can really gauge pretty accurately how close we are to God with our attitude towards sin. Does our sin pain us? So much so that it causes us to mourn. And to mourn is to have deep sorrow and regret. That's what our sin ought to do. It ought to cause us deep sorrow. It ought to cause us regret. You know what I've noticed in Baptist churches over the years is when someone begins to mourn over their sin, everybody wants to pat them on the back and tell them it's okay. No, it's not okay. Or they'll say, don't worry about it. It's good to mourn over sin. That is a good thing. It draws us closer to God. It's good to have regret over sin. And then the last word there, be afflicted, mourn, and weep, which is the expression of pain. It is the expression of the affliction. It is the expression of mourning. It's the expression of the trouble you feel. It's the expression of the sorrow and regret. So in order to draw near to God, we cannot become hardened by the deceitfulness of sin, whereby we're no longer afflicted, and we no longer mourn, and we no longer weep. If there's one thing that Baptists need to learn all over again, it's to weep over sin and to mourn over sin in our lives. So if we're going to draw near to God, there has to be godly sorrow. Notice seventhly in verse 9, let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy, the heaviness. Many times we're laughing, we ought to be crying. That's true. Many times when we're having a good time, we ought not be having a good time because of our spiritual condition. I believe what these words are saying is get serious. It's not just about laughter and joy. Let your laughter be turned to mourning. That's in light of be afflicted and mourn and weep. And all this goes back to sin. In other words, be serious. And if there was ever a time when God's people need to get serious, it's today. There's nothing more serious than spiritual things. And drawing near to God is pretty serious business. And we need to be serious about it. We need to realize that this isn't a game. This isn't a sport. This isn't a contest. This is life. This is spiritual life. This has to do with God. This has to do with a relationship with God. Get serious. So many who profess to be saved take nothing seriously as far as spiritual things are concerned. And if we're going to draw near to God, we have to be serious. We have to be serious about it. And every day I ought to be serious about my relationship with God. Every day I ought to be serious about whether or not I'm close to God or not. So be serious. Eighthly, in verse 10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. You'll never draw near to God without humility. There has to be humility. Pride will get in the way, and pride will destroy your relationship with God. Well, I'm not about to say I'm sorry. It'll keep you from getting close to God. I'm not about to do such and such. Humble yourself. It takes humility to draw close to God. It takes humility. I'm not going to argue with people who want to join Home Baptist Church, and we ought to accept them just because they want to join. You have to meet church requirements. And if you're not humble enough to do that, you're not going to be a good member anyway. Humble yourself. Just humble yourself. And we all need to do that. We need to do that every day. We all... some more than others, no doubt. But I don't believe there's a human being alive that does not battle, that does not have a problem with pride. It's always there. Has many different forms, has many different shapes. But if we're going to draw near to God, we have to be humble. Ninthly, running out of time, we need to keep a constant dependence on the will of God for our life. And that's what verses 13 through 15 is talking about. Always strive to be following the will of God. You cannot ignore, you cannot neglect the will of God and be close to God. It's not possible. If you're going to draw near to God, you have to recognize God's will. And you have to desire to be in God's will. And then lastly, do what you know to do. Verse 17, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. We all get in situations where we're not quite sure what we should do, which road we should take. But every time we find ourselves in that situation, if we think about it, there are things that we know that we ought to do. One is what we've been speaking about. I know I ought to draw near to God, so do that. Do what you know to do. Don't worry about what you don't know. Do what you know to do. And if you and I would just do what we know to do, we'd find ourselves walking closer and closer to God. So we have the exhortation, draw nigh to God. Draw nigh to God. Have we done that with our life? Are we doing that now? Are we drawing near to God? How close to God am I? Someone may think in their minds, well, I might not be where I ought to be, but brother so-and-so, I'll tell you what, they're further away than I am. Well, you need to just quit worrying about brother so-and-so. And you need to just draw nigh to God. Again, it's not a contest. It's your responsibility to draw nigh to God. And when I think about all the days that I've been saved, it just seems to me that I ought to be closer to God than I am. And I believe that's true of all of us. You think of all the opportunities that we've had to draw close to God, it just seems to me that I ought to be a lot closer than I am. And that ought to break our hearts, that we're not as close as we could be. But it also ought to encourage us to draw nigh to God. I mean, if you're not, and none of us are, if you're not as close to God as you should be, you can hang your head and you can sit under the juniper tree a while over that. Or you can say, I'm just going to draw near to God. So let us strive every day to draw closer to God. Again, don't even think about, I'm going to do more, I'm going to do more of this, more of that, more of that. You just draw near to God. Just draw near to God. And if you do that, if everybody in the church would draw near to God, every day this week, we draw just a little bit closer to God, we'd all do more. We'd all do more. And we'd all be more what God would have us to be. So let's make that our goal. Every day, hear those words, draw nigh to God. Draw nigh to God. Hear that advice. Get that advice lodged in your brain. Draw nigh to God. Draw nigh to God. Draw nigh to God. And hear those words every single day. Hear those words throughout the day. Draw nigh to God. What an opportunity. What a privilege that you and I have to draw close to God. Lost man doesn't have that opportunity. Doesn't have that privilege today. But you and I can draw near to God. And that's what Enoch did when he walked with the Lord. As he walked with God, he got closer and closer and closer to God. The longer you walk with somebody, the more you know them. And the closer you become to them. Brother Larry, if you